Last week, I wasn't in worship. I was actually in Las Vegas. And for those of you that don't know me, I wasn't in Las Vegas to do the things that most people do in Las Vegas. I was at a board game convention. Which, why are you laughing? Why do people laugh so much? Christian was with me. We were there together. Yeah, yeah. Take pride in that, Christian. Yeah, yeah. No. It was like 4 days of straight board gaming. It was really good. It was really good. It was me and 1,500 of my nerdiest friends. The body odor was unbearable by Sunday. We are now in the midst of our season of Lent together as a church. Lent, for those of you that aren't familiar with the Christian calendar, is a time of year in which we prepare ourselves before the season of Easter. It is the 40 days before Easter. And Easter for us as Christians is a big deal. But the season of Lent is the time for us to prepare our hearts and minds for that. I forgot the announcements again. I can't believe that. So we actually have a few things that are happening within the life of the church before we talk more about Lent. The first is that we have Ignite 101 today. If you are new or feel new to our church, we would invite you to join us after the service for a 30-minute crash course on who we are as a church. And this is going to get a little bit deeper than what you'll hear in a worship service. You'll be able to sit down with me and some of the other leaders in our congregation, and you will... we will together explore sort of what we're about, where we're going, and where we feel God is leading us. The other announcement that we have this morning is that this is not like an official announcement, so there's no slide for it, but I just want to let you know that there's been a lot of talk about the COVID-19, the coronavirus in the news, and of course this is something that we as a church want to just make a statement on. We're taking it very seriously. We want to be responsible with it, and so we as a church leadership team have determined that we might make some slight adjustments to the ways that we do some of the elements of worship together. And I understand that first of all we are not as Christians called to live in a spirit of fear, but also we want to, as a church community, be respectful to those people who are making reasonable changes to the way they do things. And we would not want to have any element of worship that is inaccessible to somebody because they do not want to put themselves at risk of getting sick or anything. So we appreciate your patience in this. Our thought is that we're going to try that out for the next couple weeks, and then we'll reassess. I welcome any comments or questions that you have around that, but we really do appreciate your patience as a community try and work through what is my first outbreak as a pastor. So, it's a big milestone for me. So this week is actually the second week of our worship series, Stranded in Rome, in which we are taking a look at the New Testament book of Romans. And if you're not familiar with our faith, calling Romans a book is a little misleading because it's actually a letter written by the Apostle Paul, one of the earliest leaders in the Christian movement, to a community of Jesus followers in Rome. A good chunk of our New Testament is made up of letters written by Paul to various churches and individuals, but Romans is easily his most, I'd say, ambitious work. It is the longest of all the letters, and arguably the most difficult to understand. And if any of you have ever tried to read it, you know exactly what I mean. It's full of abstract concepts and dense theological ideas, and yet perhaps it is just the word that we as people living even now in the United States in the 21st century need to hear the most. Because it's like that old saying, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Let's pray before we dig in this morning. God, you have met us here in this place, though you were also with us before we were here, and you will be there wherever we go when we leave. God, open our hearts and open our minds to that which you have to show us in all places, but especially here and especially now. Might your Spirit move in powerful ways, and might only your words be spoken, and may only your words be heard. Amen. So last week, Lauren shared with us the ideas of home, homelessness, and homecoming within Paul's letter to the Romans. And I think that this is a powerful image to work off as we continue this series of being stranded in Rome. And if you weren't here or can't remember or weren't listening to Lauren's sermon, you can actually check out her sermon on our webpage, pvmc.org/sermons, to catch up. But in the meantime, I'll give you a quick refresher. So within the book of Romans, and indeed through all the Bible, we find that God is constantly calling us home. And when I say home, I don't necessarily mean a geographical location or even a specific place. Instead, home is more of an abstract idea. It's like a concept. But I know that when I say that, some of you have already stopped listening to me, but you're trying hard to look like you're still following. So instead, to help us understand this a little bit more fully, I want you to close your eyes and just try this. And if you're a person that doesn't close your eyes, maybe you should do that. Maybe this morning's your first time. So close your eyes for just one moment. I swear it'll be just a moment. And I want you to pay attention to what comes to your mind's eye when I say home. Now, for some of you, you're picturing a physical place. Maybe the place you're currently living, or perhaps a location that's significant to you, perhaps the place that you grew up in. But I think that we all understand when I say that home isn't always the place where you keep your stuff or the place you're currently leasing or have a mortgage on. For some of us, the place where we physically lay our heads at night is full of stress and anxiety. It certainly isn't home. And so, eyes still closed, I want you to take a step further back, and I want you to think about home in a more abstract sense. Not so much a physical place, but what are the feelings that we usually associate with home? Without picturing a specific place, how is it that you know that you are home? You can go ahead and open your eyes. Or you can act like you closed your eyes and just open them. You know, for me, home is a place where one can feel totally comfortable, accepted, and able to be ourselves completely and fully. It is a place where we can walk around with our open bathrobe or sing along to our favorite song of all time using a soup ladle as a microphone. It's a place where we can be at total rest. And that is why it is such a big deal when we invite another person to share our home with us over the long term, like in a marriage or a long-term relationship. And that's also, if we're kind of being honest, why those same physical places we live in don't feel like home when our in-laws are staying in the guest room for a long weekend. Because we don't feel comfortable. I mean, I do. But maybe you don't. Look, I am convinced that we deep down know what home is. And I believe that we deep inside know what home is because we are a people created in the image of a God that is always creating and inviting us home. And therefore, we have within us a longing for the home within this creation, because we intuitively understand that this world, though it sometimes comes close, is not yet home. We understand that this place where we live, this existence that we have, is not yet home. It's like when you're returning from a long road trip up north, say to Las Vegas, and you pass the Anthem Outlet Mall, and the traffic lanes widen to 6 lanes, and it suddenly feels like you're so close to being home, and yet you're not there yet. You're still like 40 minutes away from home, and somehow it feels like the longest 40 minutes of your life, because you just can't wait to be out of your car and home again. Likewise, we understand that though this world is often a place of grace and beauty, it is not quite home. And in fact, the entire basis, the entire message, the entire thrust of the Christian message, the biblical message of our faith is a desire for homecoming. A desire for us to finally return home. When Paul was writing his letter to the Romans, he was writing to a community that felt homeless. See, Paul was writing to this early Christian community in Rome, and Rome was the capital, the very heart of the Roman Empire, an imperial world power that forced its own purportedly noble agenda onto others through the use of violence and power. It harmed and neglected the weak and powerless within its society to bolster the prosperity of the rich and powerful. And all along the way, the Roman Empire did what most empires do. It attempted to rewrite what home actually meant. It tried to redefine the narrative, to change up the story. See, our definition of home is often defined by our family roots. And for Rome, home was best perhaps summed up in the story of Aeneas. See, Aeneas, if you don't know your obscure Roman history that well, was a Trojan warrior who had a mother that was a god, who escaped the Trojan War with his father and his son and his household gods, and he became the founder of Rome. His piety and faithfulness to the ideals of Rome, made him the pinnacle of what it meant to be a Roman citizen. He was this bold warrior with incredible skills in combat, and his success was due to his tireless leadership and valiant efforts. Because our homes are shaped by our family stories. And so that it makes sense that in Rome, as one of the most powerful military and political and economic powerhouses in the known world, had an obligation to spread the peace of Rome, that is the Pax Romana, to as many lands as they could. And sure, this meant that they had to sometimes use their vast armies to subjugate people who maybe wanted to resist. But those people were barbarians. They were uncivilized. They clearly didn't know what was good for them. So they had to get a little bloody from time to time. They didn't know any better. And so after they were successfully conquered, Rome would force its people to speak the same language as them and worship the same gods as they did and tell the same stories of Aeneas and the emperor to one another. And if the people refused, well, that meant that they were viewed with suspicion and outright hostility by the Roman citizens because they were not part of the empire, at least not willingly. Because essential to Rome's story of home was to define who was in and who was out. Rome's home was made peaceful through violence. Rome's home was defined by exclusion. For the Christians in Rome, this was a heavy burden. They were forced to live in a society that kept pressuring them to buy into this life, into the message that Rome wanted them to buy into, to believe the dominant narratives of what home should be for them. And though they wanted to believe in something truer, they were being worn down by the day-to-day pressures. This message of a noble peace brought about by violence was everywhere they looked. It was in the civic prayers to Roman war heroes and former emperors decorated in their public spaces in the form of statues of their rulers. It was even stamped onto their money. But Paul, writing to the earliest Christians in Rome, doesn't buy into Rome's story of home. He doesn't buy into the myth that Aeneas, with his violent subjugation of other people, with his expansion of Rome through bloody means, is the only narrative. In fact, he believes it to be a lie. And this is actually where we're picking up in Romans chapter 4. It goes like this. Paul's in the middle of this long, dense argument, but he starts off with a different sort of story. He says, Abraham was, humanly speaking, the founder of our Jewish nation. And what did he discover about being made right with God? If his good deeds had made him acceptable to God, he would have had something to boast about. But that was not God's way. For the scriptures tell us Abraham believed God and counted him as righteous because of his faith. And when people work, their wages are not a gift, but something that they have earned. But people are counted as righteous, not because of their work, but because of their faith in a God who forgives sinners. Now, a word on the word sinners there for a moment. We don't talk a lot about sin at Ignite because we want to make sure that people feel that you feel welcome and accepted and not judged. But the reality is that within the letter to the Romans, Paul illustrates that there are people that in fact everybody, even people that God calls, are responsible for home breaking, for going against the home making of God. And we know that to be true too. Just as true as we know there to be a home, we know what home breaking looks like. We know it when we turn on the news. We know it when we harm other people. We know it when we realize that everybody, each and every one of us, is less than what God has created us to be. But we do not want to be a church that lives and rests and stews in that shame or guilt. But we are not a church that blindly looks at ourselves and does not identify that there are times when we fall short. And so in this passage that we see in Romans, we see what Paul is doing. See, instead of raising up the stories of the empire, he is instead reminding the church with a story that more accurately reflects the home that God is calling them towards, the story of Abraham. Now, if you aren't familiar with the Christian story, Abraham was a person found in some of the earliest stories of our Old Testament or the Hebrew Scriptures. He was this nomadic wanderer, a person without a home, that was called by God to step out in faith and leave his father and his mother and everything that he knew and venture out into the wilderness. God promises Abraham that he will be a father of many and that his descendants will be more numerous than the stars in the sky. God invites Abraham home, and Abraham responds in faith, trusting God's promises. By invoking the story of Abraham, Paul is directly contrasting the family roots of God's home with the family roots of Rome's home. Whereas Rome's story is about righteousness through action and ability and conquest, God's story continues to be one of righteousness through faith. Paul continues. He says, clearly, God's promise to give the whole earth to Abraham and his descendants was based not on his obedience to God's law, but on a right relationship with God that came by faith. If God's promise is only for those who obey the law, then faith is not necessary and the promise is pointless. For the law always brings punishment on those who try to obey it. The only way to avoid breaking the law is to have no law to break. So the promise by God is received by faith. It is given as a free gift. And we are all certain to receive it, whether or not we live according to the law of Moses, if we have faith like Abraham's. For Abraham is the father of all who believe. That is what the scriptures mean when God told him, I have made you the father of many nations. And this happened because Abraham believed in God, who brings the dead back to life and who creates new things out of nothing. Even when there was no reason for hope, Abraham kept hoping, believing that he would become the father of many nations. You see, for Paul, the home is not a place that is exclusionary or dependent on conquest or the exercise of personal power for selfish gain. Instead, God creates home for us and invites us into it. It is not something to be earned by one's skill level or cleverness or piety, but has instead already been built by God. It was an open invitation to everyone, regardless of what they've done. God invites us, just as he invited the Romans, into a house of grace. And you'd think that this would be good news. Last week we talked about this idea that the empire, the Roman Empire, would march into towns and they would proclaim the good news of Caesar. They would proclaim the good news of the emperor, the gospel of Rome. And the gospel of Rome was always violent. It was always about a new land that they had conquered. And so in the book of Romans, which is this incredibly political work of resistance literature, Paul uses this language of gospel, which was once a tool of the empire, and subverts it and changes it into good news that means something completely different. The good news of Jesus Christ is different from the good news of the empire, in that the good news of Jesus Christ is not one of power and might, but one of humility and forgiveness. And you would think that that would be good news for everyone. But this was actually a really difficult message for Christians in Rome to hear. For the early Jewish members of the church who saw Jesus as the fulfillment of their long-held Jewish theologies, of a lifetime of observant Jewish religion, it was offensive to think that non-Jews who didn't practice any of the Jewish rituals and often did things that were unclean by Jewish law would be extended the same blessing as their forefather, Abraham. And for those outside of the Jewish faith, it was offensive to think that these half-Christians, these people that had not yet embraced the fullness of God's forgiveness, that have not yet abandoned the relics of their past superstitious rituals, could ever belong to the church. But friends, a home built on grace, it's not a home that will easily set up barriers of exclusion against those who are seen to be unworthy of home or unclean and therefore unwelcome. Likewise, this message flew straight into the face of the story of imperial conquest and peace through violence. Because for Rome, there can only be one peace, along with a sense of security and identity of home. And that can only be achieved through the bloodshed of its enemies. It is such a narrow view of what peace could be that their only solution, their only answer to anyone that opposed them was violence, was to expel the other. But for Paul, home is achieved by faith in Jesus, the Son of God, that did not win by shedding the blood of others, but instead won by forgiving others, by welcoming them home, even while being crucified by them. This is why we celebrate the death and resurrection of Jesus, that by suffering the worst that a counterfeit story of home can offer him, Jesus still offered forgiveness and mercy through the mystery of the cross and gained victory over death. And Paul takes the tools of the empire. He rewords them. He twists them around. He makes hope arise. And so this morning I ask you, what is your story? And where is your home? Because these are the questions at the very heart of the book of Romans. Paul is asking people who feel homeless to hold on to this alternative story, a radical story, a story that gives life, not takes it away, one that defines all the conventional wisdom, defies all the conventional wisdom, one that promises a bigger table, not higher walls, one that embraces diversity, not one that is suspicious of it, and one that reconciles enemies to one another in the loving embrace of God. And I believe that that is a story that will save us. It is a story worth dying for. So what is your story? Where are you rooted? Where is your home? And that is why we turn to the Bible so often, because the Bible provides for us that rootedness. It provides for us the stories that define who we are called to be as God's people. And the truth is that perhaps maybe you have been feeling homeless for a while now. You look out into the world and you are convinced that this is not home. Even though you are surrounded by a culture that tells you that the only safety is through suspicion and the only security is through violence. Even though you are taught that home, that defining who you are is a matter of defining who you aren't and who you are against. Romans reminds us that we have this open invitation to a house of grace, one of reconciliation and openness. It is a home without barriers. It is a home that sounds similar to the kingdoms and the empires of this world, but is yet radically different. And we are invited, like Abraham, to step out not in our own confidence of our own power, but in faith to the God who calls us. And though it might seem frightening to step out into the wilderness, we are reminded that the same God who died at the hands of the empire was raised by the power of a God who invites us home.